Hey, everybody. Josh Wigler here with some summer movie podcasting for you on post-show recaps. It is July 30th as of this recording, and we are playing catch-up with a few of the summer's blockbuster releases thus far, including Ghostbusters, Jason Bourne, and Star Trek. You can listen to our Ghostbusters and Jason Bourne podcasts by heading over to postshowrecaps.com or by subscribing to the podcast at postshowrecaps.com/iTunes. With that out of the way, let's talk about Star Trek. Star Trek Beyond is over, but we're just getting started recapping the new Star Trek movie here on Post Show Recaps. Hello, everybody. I'm Josh Wigler. Very excited to finally dig into some summer movie coverage here on Post Show Recaps. A little bit late in the game, but very happy to do it and very excited to kick things off here talking Star Trek with somebody I've wanted to talk Star Trek with in an official capacity for a very long time, have probably talked Star Trek with in many unofficial capacities and strange places to talk about Star Trek with multiple times. Rob Cesternino, the biggest Star Trek fan I know, underreported story.
Josh, hold on. I'm having trouble hearing you. Hold on. I have to adjust the radio frequencies here in the studio.
You need to start speaking my language is what
needs
to happen.
Hold on. I think I got it. All right. Let's go.
Wow, it's the Sabotage. Oh, my God. All of the podcasts are exploding.
That was all we
needed. The entire post-show recap speed.
Yes. Not Sabotage. Yes.
Ah, you are a true beastie boy. Yes.
Yes.
A Sabotage tag. That was fantastic. The entirety of the Post-Show Recaps backlog is destroyed, except for the one podcast that Bones was able to fly away. And unfortunately, it was an episode of the Strain podcast that we have long
yes,
since
Yes, okay. Well, that's good. Okay. Well, then if we've abandoned it, then it's going to come back in sometime and
come back to get us
for abandoning it.
I can't even tell you how many times we have referenced The Strain on Post Show Recaps in the past, like, week and a half. Too many times.
Well, too bad we don't have a Luther podcast.
I would do a Luther podcast. That would be fun. Luther's a good show. Yeah.
Josh, I just want to get a spoiler warning out there. Because I want to. We're going to be talking about the movie.
Yeah, we are talking about the movie. We are talking about Star Trek Beyond. Rob and I have both seen the movie at this point. We are going to be talking it through from a completely spoiler-filled perspective. Maybe just in the broad stroke sense, the spoiler-free review. How was it, Rob?
It's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
I'm not blown away, and you know, nothing to be embarrassed about if you're Star Trek.
Perfectly whelmed.
It's fine. It's a fine film. You know, the damage has already been done in the Kelvin timeline
for
what we've set up here for these first two Star Trek movies. This was inoffensive.
Inoffensive, totally fine. We're going to get, Rob, I want to get your take on the Kelvin timeline. I want to get your take on the movies that exist already in the J.J. Abrams Star Trek verse. We'll talk about Beyond in super spoiler detail. If you've not seen it yet, do not proceed any further. Go see the movie. Or if you don't care, then you can proceed further. But we are now in official Star Trek Beyond spoiler territory.
In the neutral zone. Spoilers.
We're going through the Nexus. We are now
the Nebula.
The Nexus is different. That's where Kirk was in Generations, right?
Yeah, the Nexus is just like some weird thing that like floats around that you could go into and then, you know, have like dream sequences.
Every once in a while, you and I are podcasting about something. Like we were podcasting about The Walking Dead on a feedback show. And you what was the hashtag that you came up with? Something about the wolves, the something wolf nine. And you'll bust out a Star Trek reference.
Oh, Wolf 359?
Yeah, and I don't even know what you're talking about. So you are definitely the bigger Star Trek fan of the two of us. Can you clarify just how much of a Star Trek fan you actually are, like what your exposure to Star Trek actually is?
Yeah, when I was probably like, 10 or 11, I started getting into the original series that it used to run like on syndication on Channel 11 at different points. And I had a cousin who was really into it, had like some Star Trek like PC game that they used to play a lot. So I really got into the original series. And I think it was on like Nick at Night or also at something like it was, you know, on in different places in syndication. And then from that point on, I really ended up getting into Star Trek The Next Generation as that began to like air reruns in syndication. I remember there was like one summer where like Channel 11 had it on at like every night at 7 o'clock. And that was probably around like season 4 of the original run. And then, you know, I caught up on all of the, you know, for as much as you could binge watch a show at that point in time, I sort of caught up on all the episodes and then stayed, you know, with Star Trek The Next Generation, you know, obsessively to the point where, you know, I like all I wanted in life was to have know somebody else that like cared about Star Trek The Next Generation. But I was also like desperately afraid that other kids in my school would know how much I loved Star Trek The Next Generation.
Yeah, that's the tension. Like you want to find a friend who can talk it through with you, but you don't want to peek your head above ground. You don't want anyone to know.
Yes. I was like an incredibly closeted, you know, desperate to for somebody to know, but not everybody to know. You know, I really that was, you know, basically between like 1992 and 1994, 95. And then, you know, stayed with Deep Space Nine. I never loved Deep Space Nine the way I loved Star Trek Next Generation. And then, you know, I followed Voyager for most of the way through and then, you know, dabbled in Enterprise along the way. But really, Star Trek Next Generation, that was my jam.
Yeah, so when you got to Star Trek Voyager, you lost your Janeway with the franchise.
Yeah, I never loved Star Trek Voyager, and you know that was around the time that I started going to college, and I was sort of like, you know, it wasn't
at that point. Like, you can't be the guy in your freshman year dorm room who's watching Star Trek Voyager.
Yeah, you know, I kept up with it, and I feel like a lot of times, like in the summer reruns, I would catch up on a lot of what I had missed. You know, Deep Space Nine, I kept up through the whole way, but you know, Voyager was where I started to sort of like Jane Wainway. From lose my Janeway from what was going on there.
I feel like people who have watched all of Star Trek, one of the regular things I hear is that Deep Space Nine is the underappreciated gem of the franchise.
The underappreciated Jem Hadar of the franchise, perhaps.
Jake and Hagar.
It was slow in the beginning. And then it really picked up and really took on a very dark tone towards the end, which a lot of people appreciated. Like, it became very serialized towards the last, especially the final season of Deep Space Nine. So I think a lot of people really, really enjoyed that. I think that after Star Trek The Next Generation came to an end, I think that Deep Space Nine really did pick up the bat-laugh. And go ahead
with the Cardassian war, keeping up with the Cardassians.
Yeah, yeah. The, you know, the Cardassians, the Jem Hadar, all of that stuff that was going on. So, you know, really at the point that they got the Defiant. But that's really a story for another day.
Oh, my God. Well, we'll get to that day someday. But then we get to the movies. We get to, you know, the reboot. There were obviously the Next Generation movies. Were you a fan of those?
Well, I was disappointed, I feel like, with Star Trek Generations for similar reasons as to I was very bummed out about how they destroyed the Enterprise for no apparent reason. I think that, you know, Counselor Troy was flying the ship at the end of the movie, which I really think that might have been part of the reason why they ended up having to do this saucer
separation.
Dubious
decision.
Right, right. And so that kind of bummed me out, especially coming off of the, you know, original run of The Next Generation. And then I really did like First Contact. And then the last two movies are not great from The Next Generation.
Yeah, not a fan of Tom Hardy as Baby Picard.
No, I do not. But, you know, First Contact, I think, is the one great Next Generation movie.
And then the new Star Trek start to roll around. J.J. Abrams reboots. It's called the Kelvin timeline. That's the official way we talk about the Star Trek reboots?
Yes, because Spock comes through the space-time continuum and then alters the past. And so this new jumping off point, they call that the Kelvin timeline.
And you're not wild about it. I feel like you've never been wild about it. Even the first one, which people really enjoyed, and the second one was kind of whatever. But even from the first one, you weren't super, super into it.
Well, it's fine. For me, I feel like that Star Trek is a series which plays out and is more intellectual than, say, I feel like they try to turn Star Trek into Star Wars. They try to make it into sort of like this big budget action movie. And at its heart, I don't believe that's what Star Trek is.
Yeah. I think evidenced by the fact that J.J. Abrams then goes on to actually make a Star Wars movie.
Yes. And there's this incredibly interesting article, which is up at The Ringer by Micah Peters, which is called Why Is There Star Wars in My Star Trek?
Yeah.
And really is very accusatory of J.J. Abrams of trying to turn Star Trek into exactly what we're talking about in Star Wars. And that even, you know, postulates that eventually there could be some sort of Star Wars, Star Trek crossover coming down the pike. But not the Christopher Pike, but it could be very interesting to follow this. But, you know, it really is similar. And the Star Trek movies, I feel like that the greatest strength I think that they have is that they have been it's an excellent cast. You know, they did a really great job of, you know, there's not anybody that you say, oh, boy, they really swung and missed on this person. You know, the seven principals, they totally, you know, nailed every single one of them. And the cast is great, and the moments that the cast have with one another, all that stuff, I think, really plays in all of these Star Trek movies. But, you know, the fact that we're doing, you know, there's so much about, like, Kirk's dad and going back to the first, and like, Kirk's dad was never a thing. Like, that's a Star Wars thing, the story of, you know, the troubled young man who is trying to find out the, you know, the secret of, like, his father's life and trying to, you know, capture his father's glory. I mean, Captain Kirk's dad was never a thing.
That was not a thing on the show. It was never really anything that he ever wondered about too much.
Yeah, and I feel like that the portrayal of Kirk here, and you know, not to get too far off of the plot of this movie, because it's not really about that, but, you know, we have Captain Kirk talking about that he wants to take this vice admiral's position and leave the Enterprise. To me, that is such a betrayal of the Kirk character, and that Captain Kirk's whole thing is that he doesn't want to leave being the captain of the Enterprise. In Star Trek the Motion Picture, like, he's like dying to get back in that seat. I think that, you know, in his, you know, one of the final scenes he has with Picard is like, hey, never get out of that chair. They're going to try to get you out of that chair. Like, make sure you stay there. And here's this, like, what is he, like, 28-year-old Captain Kirk? It's like, yeah, I think I'm ready to move on.
Millennial Kirk doesn't want to work.
That's right. Millennial Kirk is like, okay, let me move on to this next company. Let me move on to the next opportunity. He's antsy. He says in his opening captain's log, things are beginning to feel episodic. I'm like restless. I want to move on and go do something else. And that's the antithesis of Captain Kirk. Captain Kirk, all he wants to do is be out there exploring strange, strange new worlds and meeting a lot of women along the way. This Captain Kirk is like, hey, this is getting boring. What is this? The same old every day?
So you would upvote Generations X Kirk over Millennial Kirk?
Yes. Because that I feel like that they've miscalculated that. And Spock, too. Spock, I could see a little bit more. You know, Spock's gone through a lot with, you know, the destruction of Vulcan in this Kelvin timeline, which, you know, huge body counts in all these Star Trek movies of, you know, millions of lives, you know, being lost in this. But yeah, I'm all over the place, Josh. I'm sorry. Rain me back in.
Worked up. I think that's fair. But Kirk is really, would you say that is your sorest sticking point with the new Treks?
Yeah, I feel like, well, the timeline, the fact that they took, you know, 50 years, or almost 50 years of Star Trek lore, not Data, and basically, you know, threw them out the shuttle bay. Well, like, hey, this stuff didn't happen now. This is like, we threw it all out. Forget all that. We're pushed the reset button on the history of Star Trek. So here we go. And now anything is game. That's, I think, the most troubling thing for me in the Star Trek movie franchise.
Right. I think it's difficult when you are recasting and rebooting something as iconic as the original Star Trek. I think you're right. I think in terms of the cast, at least the acting, I think that everybody really pops in a great way. But once you're revisiting that material and trying to tie it in as like a parallel continuity with the original continuity, that's when you start getting into maybe some waters that you don't want to get into.
Yeah, it's so I understand, like, oh, well, there's no stakes now of, you know, this person, you know, we can't have this person do this because that, you know, they need to be at this point and this. And because, again, that Star Trek, the original series, like, has, like, more established, you know, Kirk goes in the Star Trek 2009 movie. He goes from the Academy to being the captain of the Enterprise. Like, he had no job
in a weekend,
in between
maybe.
That.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Whereas that I don't know a lot about the, you know, the back. I don't think that they've really explored that a lot of what ranks Kirk had in between when he was at Starfleet Academy and then became the captain of the Enterprise. But we sort of just like skipped all that.
Yeah. They sort of just moved on past it.
Yeah. Yeah. We need you out there. Get out there. Go take, you know, everybody.
Well, I think that, you know, with the parallel timeline stuff, I think that that started getting really dicey for purists or even people who have passing interest in the original Star Trek. And certainly of the movies, I think most would agree that Wrath of Khan is the best of the Star Trek films. And Star Trek Into Darkness, the second movie in the Kelvin timeline, is retreading or attempting to retread some of that ground, many of the iconic beats. It's a secret con. It's a secret con job. The long con is being played with Benedict Cumberbatch secretly being this iconic villain. They have the whole moment of reversing Spock's sacrifice and giving that to Kirk in this movie as well. And I feel like a lot of people, that movie, Star Trek Into Darkness, just did not sit very well with. So for somebody who is already kind of skeptical of the new Treks, what was your take on that one? That must have been the low point for you.
You know, it wasn't really that bad. Like, I didn't walk out of the film angry or anything like that. I, you know, I think that they did a bad job of managing the Cumberbatch con situation. I don't know why they decided to keep it a secret, because the whole, you know, first third of the film is like this reveal of, oh, he says he's not Khan, but then he's supposed to be Khan, right? So I think that that was poorly handled. But, you know, I like that it was, you know, the Kirk and Spock reversal thing was a nod to the, you know, Star Trek II. So I didn't mind any of that. Again, it was so much sort of like carnage towards the end of that movie where, you know, there's all these things like blowing up on Earth. And it ends in sort of this big fist fight between, you know, Spock and Cumberbatch. And, you know, it was fine. You know, again, I didn't – the damage was sort of done for me already at this point with the – you know, I felt like that this was, to me, similar to the first movie.
But does it feel like Star Trek Beyond is course correcting on any of that stuff? If, you know, if it is like you've gotten a little too much Star Wars into my Star Trek, I think a lot of the notes that I'm seeing about Beyond is that this movie feels like a Star Trek episode. You know, it's Kirk and the crew encounter mysterious planet, get stranded on mysterious planet, have to work together to get off of mysterious planet. The only thing that is really hanging in the balance at any point is Yorktown. It's not like it's the fate of the universe or the fate of the Federation. And not to downplay Yorktown. Yorktown seems like a good place, but it's not like the huge, huge global, you know, universe-spanning stakes that seem to be at stake in the first two Star Trek movies. Do you feel like this movie was a reaction to those original Star Treks now that we're moving on from J.J. Abrams maybe not being quite as influential here in Star Trek?
You know, I've heard the same thing, but I disagree with it. I feel like, I mean, we blew up the Enterprise again for the third time in, what, 13 Star Trek movies, that we've blown up the Enterprise once again, which it does not feel like something that would happen in an episode. And, you know, the stuff that was going on the planet that they ended up landing on and everybody having their own little adventures, I guess so. But I mean, I do feel like that the fate of the Federation was at stake here, because once Idris Elba takes over Yorktown or takes Yorktown down, I mean, they're moving on. They're going, the fate of humanity, I did feel like, was resting in the balance. So I sort of reject that it felt like smaller stakes in this movie as opposed to the first two.
But it does just kind of feel, I don't know, I mean, I guess it's, you know, it's not like San Francisco is getting destroyed, London isn't falling this time around, this movie is entirely in space. I thought that that was, at least on some level, a nice change of pace from just having everything being like, oh, Earth is once again at stake, and here comes some sort of Benedict Cumberbatch villain that is going to destroy the planet. I liked that the stakes were a little bit more removed from Earth this time around.
Okay, I mean, it seemed like a guy with an unstoppable weapon once again to me. And it did feel like that the technology that Idris Elba's character had and also the space station, the Yorktown. I mean, it seems like way beyond the technology that's sort of been established for this point in Star Trek history. It really seems like.
And isn't it supposed to be super ancient technology on top of that?
I don't know. I don't know exactly. I was very confused about the plotting of the whole Idris Elba villain storyline.
Well, that is the greatest part of the movie for me because it's just completely absurd. Is Idris Elba is playing Krall, this alien villain who clearly has it out for the Federation and wants to use this ancient weapon to destroy the Federation, that the Federation's existence is an act of war, even though the Federation is supposed to believe in peace and unity throughout the galaxy and surrounding areas. And then suddenly we find out that Idris Elba was actually a human. Once yeah. upon a time, he was the captain of the USS Franklin of Jayla's home.
Franklin comes alive.
Her house. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So he was Captain Balthazar Edison once upon a time, and Uhura is able to put this together just by taking a quick glimpse at Idris Elba as a human
yes.
who is completely unrelated to the physical appearance of Idris Elba as Krall, the alien conqueror. That mm-hmm. was an incredible moment for me, just yeah. because it made absolutely no sense.
She's very observant. And then everything that was going on with the weapon that he was trying to acquire. I mean, it seemed like he was doing pretty good for himself, that he was ready to take down the Enterprise in one fell swoop. It seemed like he did not need the help of any sort of super weapon to take out Yorktown Station either. So I didn't really get that. And then I didn't understand at the end of the movie why he was back to Idris Elba from at the point that they sort of like discovered him. It was sort of like a Scooby-Doo type thing where it's like, we know who you really are. And then he just turned back into Idris Elba.
Yeah. He was just like...
But not totally normal Idris Elba. Sort of like
halfway between.
Klingon
yeah.
Idris Elba.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a bizarre chain of events. Was it because he's like now back in civilization that civilization is kind of returning to him a little bit? I don't know. I don't understand the mechanics of why he was suddenly being human again.
Yeah. I don't get that. That I don't understand. Somebody has to explain that to me. That, you know, could follow the plot line a little bit more in terms of that. But I do feel like, you know, that there was fun to be had. I know, you know, I'm complaining about a lot of things, but I don't want people to get the impression that I hated this movie. I thought it was fine.
So what did you like? Give us some of the stuff that you did enjoy.
Well, for me, the things that I like are all of the moments between the crew members. Like, I really feel like they do a great job with the Spock and McCoy scenes that they had together where Spock is injured and, you know, they got a lot of those, you know, small moments right. I think that might be what people say when they say, okay, this felt more like an episode of a TV show, because I do think that they get, when they go small, I feel like that they get things really right, where we have, you know, Kirk and McCoy, you know, having a drink, oh, you know, together talking about things, you know, that feels authentic, you know, like the little beats that happen between the characters, all that stuff plays for me and works for me. I think it's the big moments that they try to do, like the big set pieces that do feel like that. I don't know what I'm watching. I mean, this could be any generic sci-fi movie that we're getting into when they go big in these movies.
Did you like that Spock gave Uhura a tracking device as jewelry?
I mean, the Spock and Uhura relationship also is a little bit weird, you know. I mean, it doesn't bum me out or anything like that. But, you know, I did feel like that they were really like, making it seem like that, you know, Spock is like some sort of obsessive stalker or something like that.
Yeah. No, I thought that was funny. I liked that. I mean, Spock, for a guy who isn't supposed to feel emotion, is supposed to act purely on logic, in all three of these movies, I feel like he's a fairly emotional guy.
Yeah, I do think that they explore that side of him. And certainly, I mean, in this movie, he's impaled and you sort of like, you know.
Just like getting loopy from blood loss and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, so that's certainly possible. So that none of that really bothers me in terms of the portrayal of Spock. And I actually did like how they handled the death of Leonard Nimoy in the film.
Yeah, I was going to ask. I mean, this was something that obviously happened very close. I think maybe Star Trek was already in production, or was very close to production by the time that Leonard Nimoy passed away. He's obviously been a fixture in these first two movies in the Kelvin timeline. Could not be, you know, how were they going to write him out? Or were they, you know, was he already going to be a part of the Beyond storyline? And then we find out that he's dead in the universe as well. You liked that tribute and how that affected Zachary Quinto's Spock. You thought that
yeah, I thought that that was nice how they handled it, where the future ambassador Spock has died, and there's a lot of, like, McCoy saying, I can't even imagine, you know, how that feels. And then Zachary Quinto's Spock, you know, opens up his memory box and sees that picture of the original cast. And I bet that, like, he should show that to some of those other people. Like, oh, my God, this is what I look like? This is what...
Yeah.
This is terrible news.
Scotty's going to be like, oh, my God. I've got to get out more.
Oh, my God. So interesting to see how that's going to turn out. But in terms of the... You know, it would seem that, like, in the Back to the Future of it all, like, I mean, wouldn't that picture be changing up? Like, I mean, if Spock and Uhura are going to end up together, like, it just seems like the timeline is changing.
Well, that's because they are in an alternate universe. They are in an alternate timeline. So that's not even the picture they're driving towards.
Okay, so that's a picture from the other. But does that picture exist still? I don't know.
Well, does it? That's the thing. Does that universe even exist anymore?
Is it the publicity photo from Star Trek V? Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So are you a big Bones guy? You feel like you would be a big Bones fan.
Yeah, no, he's great. I mean, he's, I think, the most relatable character of all of these. I mean, he's the one person that's like, wait, we're doing what? Like, you have to be out of your mind. You know, he's a little salty. I you know, certainly the DeForest Kelly performance is, you know, iconic. And I think that they do a good job with the Bones here. The question I had here was, it did seem odd to me that the Carl Urban McCoy is, you know, he's the pick that they have to go and fly one of these drone ships. Like, that seemed absurd to me. Almost like Counselor Troy at the helm of the Enterprise at the end of Star Trek Generations. That seemed like a weird pick. They said, okay, well, you're the person with knowledge of this spacecraft and also, you know, can monitor Spock's injury, so you're the guy to go.
So who would you have sent? If you were the Kirk of the situation, who is on that mission to fly that thing?
I mean, we don't have anybody else that is a pilot besides our doctor.
It worked in Lost. Like, anytime something terrible had to happen, they sent their doctor to go fix it.
Oh, I thought you were going to say they sent Greg Grunberg, who was the pilot, who was at
yeah,
Yorktown.
Yes, they also sent Greg Grunberg.
So, again, you know, you want to keep McCoy and Spock together in as many scenes as possible. But that seemed a little bit odd to me.
I feel like it's because Carl Urban is more regularly thought of as, like, an action type of character. You know, he's Judge Dredd. He's going to be the bad guy in the new Thor movie. Like, that's when you think of Carl Urban, you think of him in action movie roles. And I think that's why he's great as Bones. I think it's kind of against type. I remember when Carl Urban was cast, I was very skeptical of how that would turn out. And he ended up being my favorite character in the first of these movies. I think that there's probably just a little bit of an impulse every once in a while to, like, let's
impulse
get Carl
power?
Urban. Yes, yeah. I think, you know, let's get Carl Urban into an action scene. It feels like the right thing to do every once in a while. But I agree. I don't know if that's the right role for the doctor of the ship in that moment in time.
Josh, can we talk about Jayla?
Yeah, of course. I love Jayla. Jayla from the Block.
Yeah. You know,
what would your Jayla name be?
What do you mean? Like, how
Montgomery Scott becomes Montgomery Scotty, or James T. Kirk becomes James T.
I think I'd be, would you, Rob has a podcast.
You'd just be Rob C.
Rob has a podcast. No, that's what she would call me.
Do you think that she has a bunch of old episodes of Rob has a podcast in her house?
That's possible, that she's listening to them at full volume.
Yeah, if she's got, like, Beastie Boys music, she probably has some podcasts on.
But Josh, the thing about Jayla was that right before I went into the movie, that I had posted on Snapchat, I said, I'm going to go see Star Trek Beyond at, you know, 10 a.m. on a Sunday by myself. Like, what's the most depressing part of this story? And, you know, people were, you know, sort of making fun of me on Snapchat. But then somebody wrote to me and said, Jayla is Abby Maria. And I couldn't get that out of my head the entire movie because, I mean, that she sounds exactly like Abby Maria Gomez.
With me, your dad.
And then she kind of, like, visually, I think she kind of looks like her.
Wow. If Abby Maria was an alien, and I don't know what type of alien Jayla was, do you have that classification?
I think she is a new species, which has never been seen before. But she looked like her, she acted like her, and she sounded like her.
Jayla Abby Maria?
Yeah. It was uncanny. I couldn't get it out of my mind the whole film.
She doesn't have as many rivalries, I feel like, as Abby does. I mean, yeah, she's like very hard up against Crawl and all of those people, but she wants to avoid them at all costs. She doesn't want to go and fight those people. Yeah. She wants to avoid them completely. So that feels anti-Abby Maria to me.
Get over it.
Yeah.
Get over it.
Well, yeah, she was very, you know, testy.
That's pretty good. I had not connected that, and I wish you had told me ahead of time because I would have enjoyed watching the movie that much more.
Yeah, go back and look at it. You won't be able to get it out of your head.
So does that make Montgomery Scotty the Pete Bro of Star Trek Beyond?
Yes, Montgomery Scotty. Yeah, that was good. But she's going to go to the Starfleet Academy, so I wonder if she's going to be in the next Star Trek movie.
Yeah, are you good with the return of Jayla if they do Star Trek 4?
You know, I'm fine with it. Like, I would rather spend time with these characters that we know about and, you know, these iconic characters rather than spend a lot of time. You know, I feel like all the Star Trek movies have done this, you know, even the ones that are, you know, we spend a lot of time, you know, building up new characters and, you know, that. I'm fine with, you know, spending more time with the characters that we already know.
Yeah. Well, I wonder if there even will be a Star Trek 4. I know that they've already announced that there are some plans. There's some story ideas for Star Trek 4. Chris Hemsworth, again, with the daddy issues. Chris Hemsworth is apparently locked in for Star Trek 4. That was announced even before Star Trek 3 came out.
Yes.
But I feel like box office wise, how's this movie really doing? I think it's made about $95.5 million worldwide as of this recording. We're recording it on the Wednesday after it's come out. It's a huge budget. It's almost $200 million. Do you think that this is the end of the Star Trek movies, or do you expect that they will keep going with them?
See, I had predicted that it was going to be a bust. I thought that there wasn't going to be a lot of people really pumped up for this. And, you know, I was wrong on that. The movie was not a bust, but I don't even know if you say it was a disappointment, but I think that the overall box office was pretty meh. Or whatever. And so I was trying to think of a good Star Trek pun. And yeah.
You've had plenty of them. It's okay.
Yeah.
You've proven your bona fides at this point.
But I just don't know, you know, if it's a $60 million opening for the third film, even with, Chris Hemsworth is in it. I mean, is it going to do another $60 million opening? Like, and would they be lucky if that was the case? So I just wonder if maybe they could, you know, could they do it on a smaller budget and not have as many, you know, action set pieces? And would they, you know, get the same audience that they have here? Because I just don't know. If you are not a Star Trek fan already, who's going to see, like, was the average, you know, 18-year-old, you know, group of friends like, hey, what's coming out this weekend? Hey, should we go see Star Trek 3?
Right.
I don't know. And I just don't think that Star Trek ever had the mainstream appeal that Star Wars is so ubiquitous that, you know, young, old, men, women, everybody, you know, is going to go see a Star Wars movie. But a Star Trek, I still feel like that it is more of a niche thing. And the further down the road you go in this reboot, I feel like that there's less and less people that say, well, I didn't see the first ones or whatever, or I'm not excited about this. And I feel like that each one is going to have a lower and lower opening. So I do feel like a little bit like, what's the point here with this Star Trek movie franchise?
Because it's going to get the Thor bump.
How big of a Thor bump is there going to be?
I don't think there's going to be much of a Thor bump.
So I don't know. I mean, I'm much more excited as a Star Trek fan for the upcoming Star Trek TV series, which had some news this past week where they were able to show us the new ship.
What did you think of that? This was revealed at Comic-Con that the new show is going to be called Star Trek Discovery. That's an unfortunate abbreviation for that show, although I believe Brian Fuller, who is creating this show, is referring to it as Star Trek Disco. So trying trying to control the spin on that one right now. I think that the other hashtag is a little not so great. But what did you think about the Star Trek Discovery?
The Star Trek Discovery, I mean, it sounds interesting, but I don't think we know exactly what the timeline is. We know that it's not going to be in the Kelvin timeline. They said it's going to be in the original star, the prime timeline.
Prime timeline.
Yes, that's what the regular timeline is referred to. But it's going to be in the prime universe, but I don't think we know exactly when it's going to be. I thought I had heard potentially that it was going to be set in between Star Trek, the original series, and Star Trek, the Next Generation.
That's devastating news for everybody who is hoping that Michael Dorn would just hop on to Star Trek Disco, as Michael Dorn is wont to do.
I don't know. I don't know exactly how they're going to do this, but I think that more on that to come. But, you know, I'm very excited to see what they're going to do because, I mean, Star Trek, you know, sure, Enterprise existed on UPN during, like, you know, from, like, what is it, like, 2004-ish or around that. I think it got canceled, like, 2005 or 2006.
It's been a while since there's been a Star Trek series on television.
Yeah, I mean, it's been almost, like, 10 years now at this point. And I feel like it'd be interesting to see what Star Trek is able to do in the peak TV era.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. I mean, as a CBS All Access show, that's kind of interesting that it's internet only. And apparently it's Netflixable for everybody except for the United States and Canada.
Yeah. So, I mean, that doesn't really, stigmatize it in any way in my mind that it's going to be on CBS All Access. I would think it would be the quality of, you know, a show that you would see on Netflix, which I don't think it's like, oh, it's a Netflix show. It seems like it's so low budget to me. I think it'll be fine. And, you know, the effects on these things, don't cost, you know, a fraction of what they cost at the time of Star Trek The Next Generation. So I think that you will see a show that, you know, it's not going to have any sort of like, I don't know if it'll be Game of Thrones in terms of the production value, but I think it's going to be probably as good as anything else that's sci-fi on TV.
Did you have any hot takes about the Sulu of it all? This was the big reveal that came out in the weeks before Star Trek Beyond hit, that John Cho as Sulu was going to be gay in Star Trek Beyond, and George Takei was not very happy about it, and there was a whole big hubbub about it online. Having seen the movie, how it played out, any thoughts, any feelings about that whatsoever?
No, I didn't have any hot take on it, and I understand what George Takei is saying. I also understand, I read some quotes that Simon Pegg had to say about why they chose to do it, and if they decided to have a different character that was going to be LGBT in the show that wasn't an established character, it wouldn't have had the same impact that it would to have one of the, you know, principal seven have that storyline. The only thing that I thought was weird in the movie was Kirk's reaction to it. It was almost like that this was like a big surprise to Kirk as well, who has worked with Sulu for, you know, 3 years in the film. Like Kirk had like the reaction that we had as the audience of like, oh, you know, it just seemed like that this was like a surprise to him as well.
Kirk and Sulu need to hang out more. They need to, you know, clearly Kirk does not have his fingers on the pulse of the people in the Enterprise.
Yeah, it's like you would think that would have come up at some point.
Well, no one knows Kirk's true birthday, so Kirk isn't exactly sharing himself.
Well, I also have a little bit of a gripe with Kirk's birthday at the end of the film. Felt like it was a little indulgent to celebrate, Captain Kirk's birthday, you know, after all of the loss of life that we've had in this film. And, you know, I'm not even talking about the tragic loss of the, you know, the real life actor who plays Chekhov.
Anton Yelchin.
And I'm not even talking about that at all. But I mean, how many
people within the movie itself, there's just like a ton of crew members.
People, how many crewmen and women of the Enterprise did we lose? I mean, 50, 60, 70? It just seemed like pretty quick to get back together like 2 days later to celebrate Kirk's birthday.
And also like all of the personal items that must have been aboard the Enterprise, like in the lockers and in their living quarters, like the things that they'll never see again, family photos, family heirlooms, family jewelry, all sorts of stuff has been lost. And everybody seems pretty upbeat and ready to celebrate Kirk's birthday.
Don't you think that birthday party seemed really weird, where it was like, I felt like with the wardrobe in that scene, I felt like they didn't even attempt to do anything. I was like, let's just have everybody, like, if you had like some sort of like a, you know, you went out for drinks with the cast of Star Trek movies. It's like, I just wear whatever you were going to wear that day. And this, we'll just put you in the scene in that. That's fine.
Yeah, like Bones had like a, he had like an open like collared shirt with like a gold chain, like a simple chain. He looked pretty casual.
I mean, in a way, I kind of liked it, because no matter what you do, 20 years from now, we'll look at this and say it's like ridiculous. But it just seemed like they weren't even like, let's just go to American Apparel, just pick out whatever you want, and then let's just, you know, no logos, let's just go.
What did you think about the fact that Beastie Boys is being referred to as classical music in the future of Star Trek?
I mean, that's fine. I mean, I feel like it was a little bit of a cute moment to like in the midst of like this like fight for their lives. Like, hey, what is this classical music? So, you know, they're trying to get the humor in there. I just, like, even the idea that this plan would even work was so comical of, like, oh, we'll play a song really loud, and that'll disrupt everything that these guys are doing. This very sophisticated technology, if we just blast, you know, a really loud Beastie Boys song, that'll destroy everything. Even though these ships are designed to crash into things... Then,
do you think that like any loud noise would have worked too? Like if they were just able to like get on a megaphone and just be like la 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 la, would that have done
I
it?
Think so. Anything that was loud and distracting, that would have thrown off all of the ships. I also read.
I look forward to the YouTube edits to come. Then I feel like that's a very memeable thing.
Yeah, that's funny. Like the when at the final season of Breaking Bad, when you know, Hank's watching the tape that Walter made.
Right.
Of you know, you can put anything in there. Yeah, I also had read in the Reddit comments that somebody had written about how and did they really need to also set up the boombox like on the bridge of the Franklin? Like, couldn't they have just like played the music? Like, did they need a boombox on the bridge as well, playing the music, like to use like that the aux out of Abby Maria's boombox? Yeah.
That's to make us all feel very old.
I guess so.
Yeah, I don't know if they needed that. I thought
oh no!
It's the sabotage.
Yeah. Also, Kirk riding the motorcycle is a little jump the sharky for me.
But he has his whole big, like, motorcycle chase in the first one. He's big into that. That's nothing new, you know? Like, that's going to come up. Anytime Kirk can ride some sort of vehicle that's not a starship, we're going
to
see it happen in one of these movies.
It's so
that's
silly
just, like, par for
it's
the course
so silly
at this point.
That, yeah, and, like, they were just on the Franklin, and it's like, oh, like, they have a motorcycle here. Oh, okay, that makes sense. Why wouldn't, you know, some derelict starship just have a working, gassed-up motorcycle hanging out on it? Sure, why not? That makes sense.
They had, like, a, I don't know, they had, like, a bike pit somewhere in the in the Franklin.
You're saying that the Sons of Anarchy, that somebody, the yes. original captain was Idris Elba, was Sam Crow?
Yeah, that may have been it. He could have been a future generation Sam Crow.
Yeah, okay.
That could have been where we're going.
That's possible.
It seems unlikely, but I don't think it's impossible.
Yeah, Sam Crail.
Sam Crawl. Starting to wrap up a little bit. We mentioned Chekhov before. Very tragically, Anton Yelchin died in the weeks leading up to this movie. I'm sure many of you guys have heard about that already. Clearly, I don't think that it would be right. I don't think that it's anything that's necessary to do to recast Chekhov after this. What do you do with Chekhov if you come back for Star Trek IV? Do you just say like he's on another mission? How do you think that the movies will handle that?
I mean, I think they did a great job of handling the Leonard Nimoy thing, and I think that, you know, you could start, if they have a fourth movie, I think you could start it at some sort of a service for Chekhov, of that, you know, they, you know, he lost his life, you know, bravely defend, you know, doing something noble, and I think you could sort of like have that as sort of like the jumping off point for the next film.
Yeah, big bummer. Great actor, that guy. Do you remember him from Curb Your Enthusiasm at all, Rob?
No, I'm not really familiar with his work outside of Star Trek.
He's Larry's, I think it's his nephew, who's really into magic. Yeah. And he's trying to tell Larry how he's a real magician, and Larry doesn't buy it. And he was like, I think like 12 years old at the time he was shooting that role, and he was fantastic. And he's been terrific in so many movies outside of that. So no, it was bittersweet getting to see his last performance here as Chekhov.
Absolutely. Very, very tragic. And I'm sure that they will handle it very tastefully, moving forward in the next film.
Moving forward into the next film, if you were in charge, what would you do with this cast of characters in a fourth Star Trek movie?
I think that there's so much really good, source material there. And I feel like that rather than trying to copy what they've done in the movies where it's like, okay, well, let's try to recreate what happened in Star Trek II. I feel like there's so many great Star Trek episodes that you could pick from and just sort of like build a screenplay around the events from, one of the classic Star Trek episodes and, build a plot that's like that. I mean, if you're going to pay homage to the show, I think you can do that in a lot of different ways. I don't think we need necessarily some, because what they're coming up with is not better than anything that they came up with in the original series.
Is there any episode that comes to mind as one you would like to see adapted for the big screen?
I'd have to really think that through. Would you want to see Kirk fight a Gorn in a movie?
go to Arena? Gorn? Nobody likes Gorn.
No, people like it. Or maybe like take like the best parts of like a couple different episodes and figure it out. I think that there is probably, let's not do Tribbles, but other than that, City on the Edge of Forever is iconic, but I kind of feel like, it's tough. What about Mirror Universe? Mirror, Mirror.
Well, I wonder if that's sort of the area that they're going in, if they're bringing Chris Hemsworth back into it. Is it some sort of Mirror Universe thing, or is it some sort of time travel thing? Obviously, that's really the question, is it doesn't seem like they're just, announcing him as a cameo. It seems like Kirk's father will have an active presence in the movie, so much so that they talk about Kirk's father in this third one, that I kept waiting for him to pop up. I'd forgotten that Chris Hemsworth was going to be in the fourth one. I kept waiting for him to be here in Star Trek Beyond. They talk about his dad so much.
Yeah. I do think that the Mirror Universe would work well for a, 2-hour movie of like going into the Mirror Universe and then, coming back and seeing what's going on over there. I think that that would be something that would format well to the movies. But then is it the Mirror Kelvin Universe? So it's tricky.
That would be the third universe in this series of Star Trek films.
Are you counting the original Mirror Universe?
Yeah. Yeah. So four, technically.
There's a lot going on there.
A lot going on. All right. Anything else on Star Trek Beyond before we say goodbye?
No, I just hope that people don't feel like, we talked a lot about the things that I didn't like. I think that it is a, fine way to pass 2 hours. There's nothing in this film that I'm going to be, really like, sort of like was super memorable in terms of the good. Like, I'm like, oh man, that, I got to watch that again. That was so amazing in what I saw, but it's fine. I mean, I think that if you're a Star Trek fan and you haven't seen it yet and you were listening to this, I think that you would enjoy the 2 hours that you spent watching it, but I don't think it's like anything that it's not one of the top five Star Trek movies.
It's totally solid. It's leaps and bounds better than Into Darkness, as far as I'm concerned. I don't think it's as good as the first of these new Star Trek movies, but it was a totally fine way to pass 2 hours. Some really fun action, some really fun character moments especially between Spock and Bones. I think that that was the best story of the movie. I am now compelled to watch it again to look out for J. Labby Maria. I think that that sounds like a really fun time at the movies.
Yes.
But other than that, it was fine. It was good.
Yeah, I recommend it.
It worked out very well. All right. Do you have a hashtag for this, Rob?
I would have to say,
do you want to go with hashtag JLABI Maria? JAYLABIMARIA?
I don't want to, but I think we should.
Okay, so let's go with hashtag JLABI Maria then. That is the official hashtag for this podcast. So that's it for us on Star Trek. We have more summer movie coverage ready for you right now. We're talking Ghostbusters and Jason Bourne elsewhere, so head to PostShowRecaps.com for those podcasts, or subscribe at PostShowRecaps.com/iTunes to listen to everything we are doing. Anything else for you, Rob?
No, that's it for me, Josh.
All right, well, that's it for me as well. Hope you guys enjoyed. Talk to you soon. Goodbye.